Taking Aim with
Rav Shonman
and Maya Shon, coming to you Tuesday, June 27th, 2006. On Thursday, June 22nd, a paramilitary squad of dozens of federal agents dressed in olive fatigues and combat equipped descended upon the impoverished and predominantly African-American and Haitian Liberty City neighborhood of Miami. They cordoned off the neighborhood, questioned residents, searched several homes, and then attacked a cinderblock windowless warehouse, blowtorching the metal door to enter. Their target, seven young men, ages 21 to 32. On Friday, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez announced, he declared that the United States was now confronted with homegrown terrorists, such as those involved in the 2004 Madrid train attack and the 2005 London bombings. The targets of this new homegrown terrorist group was the 110-story Sears Tower and FBI buildings throughout the United States, including the headquarters in Miami. This was, he said, a war against the United States. Yet, FBI Deputy Director John Pistole admitted immediately after to the press that no weapons and no explosives had been found. The supposed plot to blow up buildings had been, he said, quote, more aspirational than operational. Today on Taking Aim, playing the terror card, the Miami Mirage. Ralph?
Well, Maya, what we have to look at here is that the accused in this matter are charged with actually doing nothing. They have not committed any act. They are not engaged in any crime. And there is not a scintilla of evidence about they're doing anything whatsoever except for the claims of an FBI operative, an agent provocateur, who by the authorities' own admission is the source for every single piece of allegation and attribution to these people. The accused themselves have not been engaged in any act for which there is evidence. No statement of theirs has been made. No written document is in existence. No organized activity can be actually documented. It is manufactured by the FBI through an undercover agent posing as a terrorist mastermind to entrap these people and target them for arrest. One of the most interesting aspects of the way in which they've been charged is that they were accused of being hostile to the government of the United States. Now, even assuming that this is true, since when is that a crime? And since when is that a basis for targeting people for arrest? The four-count indictment presented by the Justice Department contains not a single indication of an overt criminal act or the means of carrying one out. The brief 11-page document consists entirely of alleged statements made by the defendants to an FBI informant, and they are referred to throughout the indictment as the statements of the Al-Qaeda representative, and the Al-Qaeda representative is none other than the government itself. And that is indeed, with unintended irony, a very appropriate designation. For the real Al-Qaeda representatives are Gonzalez and Pistole and the authorities who have contrived this consummate entrapment plan, unleashing dozens of combat-equipped federal agents dressed in olive-drab fatigues, carrying automatic weapons, and descending on the African-American neighborhood of Liberty City, which is one of the poorest in the United States, and was the scene of an uprising in the 1980s after the acquittal of white cops for the beating to death of a black motorist.
Ralph, there were two news conferences, the one with Alberto Gonzalez in Washington and another in Miami. And at the news conference in Miami, U.S. Attorney R. Alexander Acosta said officials had decided to raid the warehouse and make the arrests on Thursday because the investigators had sufficient evidence and were confident that they had fully developed the case. Acosta said that each of the arrested members of the cell, the Seas of David, quote, had intent to pose a threat. You want to go and disrupt cells like this before they acquire the means to accomplish their goals. Acosta said that the group came to the law enforcement attention when the one of the young men, the eldest in the group, Nariel Batiste, was approached by an individual about waging jihad inside the United States. The unidentified individual went to the authorities. This is what the FBI is saying, when in fact it looks like this individual had approached the group himself. This unidentified individual went to the authorities with the information and posed as an Al-Qaeda member. He was working with us. And it's exactly everything that you see in the 11-page indictment. In fact, the only evidence, hard evidence of anything aside from the fabrications of this FBI agent, this agent provocateur, is some videotape that is of the FBI headquarters in Miami. Who supplied the camera? The FBI admits the camera itself was supplied by its own, quote, Al-Qaeda representative.
Well, Maya, it's not just a question of supplying the camera. Who proposed taking pictures? Who, in fact, took the pictures? Who arranged the memory chip for a digital camera? All of this is the work of the FBI. The FBI has done every aspect of the crime that they've imputed to these people, and there isn't any evidence on record from the authorities about any of these people who have been arrested having any involvement in these events, other than the actions of the FBI operative himself. In fact, when you speak about Pistoli acknowledging that the supposed plots to blow up buildings were more aspirational than operational, there is no evidence of aspiration, let alone operation. The Seas of David is a pacifist religious group which seeks to meld aspects of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. They had the Star of David as an emblem. They were quiet. They were, and they, by the way, one of the aspects of this charge is that they were stated to have been wearing turbans. You know what their turbans were, brothers and sisters? They were bandanas. How about Terrell Owens and Lasting's Millage of the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Mets, respectively, and any other African-American of the inner city being arraigned for wearing a turban when they wear the headdress that is a normal comportment of African-American working-class youth?
Ralph, this is a very good point. The sting operations in the past, the FBI sting, that is, when they send in agent provocateurs, have in the past targeted Muslim immigrants. Last month, for example, Pakistani immigrant Shakawar Shiraj in New York City was found guilty of plotting to blow up the Herald Square subway station in a so-called plot that the evidence indicated was based entirely on suggestions from an FBI informant. The agent provocateur and the FBI agent provocateur taunted the defendant with photographs of Abu Ghraib torture victims and demanded to know how, as a Muslim, he could fail to take action. Similarly, in Albany 2 years ago, that's Albany, New York, the FBI recruited a Pakistani immigrant, promising him leniency on minor fraud charges to ensnare two other immigrants in a fictitious scheme to help a non-existent person buy a weapon for a fake terrorist plot. There are other examples of these sting operations conducted by the FBI against Muslim immigrants. What we have here is a sting operation that is targeting U.S. citizens. Five of the seven in this so-called terror plot were born in the United States, five are born in the United States, and two are legal residents, and one is an immigrant, so that there are, it must be four are born in the United States. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the hoopla of R. Alexander Coster about a hatred of America, what is this based upon? The Liberty City living conditions where these young men, like the population at large, hates the poverty and oppression that prevails there, the unbridled brutality of the police, and the consistent abuse of Haitian immigrants who despise the imprisonment and repression that Washington has meted out to any who attempt to escape the brutal conditions imposed by U.S. imperialism on Haiti itself. And the government's involvement in this plot is nowhere made more clear than as you have described the sting operations of Shawash Shash, the Pakistani immigrant of Herald Square. But these characteristic operations of the government itself are the paradigm. We have documented throughout our broadcasting with respect to the government operation of 9/11 how this works. In the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, Imad Ali Salem is a government operational figure, the FBI's man, who provides the explosives, who solicits young men in the mosque of Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, and indeed is responsible for every aspect of the so-called plotting. They provide the van, they provide the explosives, Sughuzi Hadass, a Mossad operative. It is the paradigm. There is nothing different about what they've done here than what they did at Lodi in California, what they've done in Toronto, which we're going to discuss, what they did in Madrid and London, and what they did with respect to the bombing of the embassies in Nairobi, and Dar es Salaam, where, again, FBI operatives were in charge of the operation, organized the events. This is what we're essentially addressing. Now, CNN has featured continuously the government propaganda with respect to this entirely contrived event. It was announced, by the way, the appearance on Larry King Live of high-ranking officials of the U.S. government before any evidence had been actually presented to the press. CNN, families insist suspects not terrorists. The families describe these young men as quiet, orderly, actually employed. One of the main figure is a construction worker who earns $30,000 a year. They called themselves the Brothers. They had a small community group, and their precepts were no meat, no tobacco, no alcohol, no drugs, learning martial arts and meditating. And they are all engaged in studying religion, particularly Christianity. The main accused is a Roman Catholic, and his family are well known in the local Catholic church of the area. These are young people picked out to be targeted because they are black and poor and Haitian, and they formed a small group of young men. These are people under... they're teenagers and a couple of young men in their 20s who had formed a little group together who have absolutely no engagement in any of the political issues that are raised by the authorities. The family of the accused Fanor, who calls himself, according to the authorities, Brother Sunni, told reporters he was innocent of all charges, and it has been confirmed that he is a practicing Roman Catholic and not a Muslim, which is completely puts the lie to the designations of the authorities with regard to these young people.
Well, Ralph, I'd like to state again how I found the facts, that five of the seven accused are born in the United States. One is a Haitian legal resident, and one is an undocumented Haitian immigrant. The FBI is contending that this plot to topple the Sears Tower in Chicago and the FBI headquarters in Miami, as we said before, it was more aspirational than operational. And Attorney General Gonzalez acknowledged that the men had neither weapons nor explosives and there was no immediate threat. Now, this is very important because in Chicago, the law enforcement, the Chicago Police Superintendent, Philip J. Klein, said, quote, that there was never any imminent danger to the Sears Tower or to the city of Chicago. this means that the FBI was creating this at a very opportune time for the Bush administration and for the congressional attempts to destroy the civil liberties here in the United States, to impose terror on the United States as they impose terror on the peoples of Iraq and other peoples throughout the world. Remember that the supposed ringleader, Narciel Batiste, was approaching this FBI informer, this undercover agent, this unidentified person, that he supposedly met with him repeatedly and was asking to meet with Al-Qaeda, that he gave him a list of items that would be needed for this proposed war: uniforms, binoculars, radios, vehicles, a bulletproof vest, machine guns, and $50,000 in cash. They gave the shoe sizes of the seven members of the group, and it was only shoes that were supplied by the FBI to the group. Remember, this group didn't even have boots. They had to ask the FBI for boots. The group wore uniforms, supposedly, according to the FBI, bearing the Star of David. And as you said, they met for Bible study, prayer, and martial arts. So this supposed group had nothing. They didn't even have their own boots. They didn't have any vehicles. They didn't even have binoculars, something very that doesn't cost very much. They didn't have radios. They didn't have any of the necessary items that you would need to have any action, whether it was a burglary or any attack on anything, and certainly not an attack on the 110-story World Sears Tower. This is entirely a fabrication of the U.S. government.
In the Washington Post report on the 23rd of June, FBI Special Agent Richard Colko acknowledges in a statement that the operation was terrorist-related, that the individuals posted no threat to the United States. But FBI Director Robert Mueller had appeared on Larry King Live on the 22nd. And foretelling what was going to be presented, he said this was part of an ongoing operation and details would be released at news conferences on the following day. And it's interesting because in the report of the in the Washington Post, the authorities, before they have produced any of the propaganda about this presumptive event, are already making the comparisons that are intended to fix it in the minds of the public. This is the way they operate is the following. Several of the of these people lived in the region of the September 11th hijackers, including ringleader Mohammed Atta. See, they live in an area that is near where Mohammed Atta lives. Ah, what about the 60 Mossad operatives who were based in a house three doors down from Mohammed Atta? We could deal with Mohammed Atta. And again, in this article, they're already making comparisons with Jose Padilla, a former South Florida resident who was being charged with being part of a support cell for Islamic extremists. This is the most transparent guilt by association with people who themselves were framed in the first place. Now, it's interesting, too, to look at the New York Times report on the 24th, because the presentation by the Attorney General of the United States has already orchestrated what they intend to present this before the public to be, without any evidence whatsoever, that there are now homegrown terrorists who will prove to be as dangerous as groups like Al-Qaeda. And the homegrown terrorists are not Muslim. The homegrown terrorists are business people, working people, anybody. In fact, they are everywhere in the United States, says Gonzalez. They are not part of sleeper cells, according to the report here in the New York Times. They are simply citizens of the United States at random. Anyone in the population now is considered to be a homegrown terrorist in potential. And that's the nature of the spying operation that is essentially the architecture of the fascist state. the passage of which and the secret introduction in which in the Congress, while these events are being prepared, we will be discussing further on in this program. In Chicago, the police superintendent, Philip Klein, who was clearly not in the loop, stated, "There has never been any imminent danger to the Sears Towers or the city of Chicago." And, in fact, the evidence that is being put forward here shows no connection of these people to any event in Miami, let alone Chicago. There is no evidence that these people took any photographs of anything. The only evidence that there was even a camera involved is the claim of the FBI operative. But there's no camera produced. There's no photograph produced. The actual evidence that is being put forward here is contrived from beginning to end.
Ralph, the indictment states that this group was out to levy war against the United States and that they had pledged an oath to Al-Qaeda and the purported mission of Al-Qaeda to destroy FBI buildings within the United States. Photographs were produced, actually. These are photographs submitted by the FBI informer, and they're photographs of the FBI building in North Miami and photographs and video of other federal buildings in the Miami Dade County
but
of
not,
Florida.
But, true, Maya, but not photographs related to Fanor. There is no evidence that these photographs are anything but photographs that have been taken at some point in time by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The evidence that there is a connection between those photographs and any specific camera, let alone an event involving these people, is absent. It isn't there. They don't have it. They can't produce it. They don't even attempt to do it. And what's interesting about the way they orchestrate this is the way in which, for example, the New York Times, quoting Gonzalez, makes these the connections that they propose. On the basis of one of the accused, Bautista, Mr. Poynton, attending a Bible study session, they make the following conclusion, that this is parallel to the arrest in Canada of 17 men accused of plotting attacks using fertilizer bombs. Well, the Toronto attacks are involving the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. The fertilizer bombs were provided by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in their entirety. The phosphium nitrate, every bit of the evidence follows the same pattern. And Gonzalez, at his news conference at the Justice Department, on the basis of this non-existent evidence, links these same events in Miami, presumptive events in Miami, to, quote, cases involving the Madrid train bombing in 2004 and the London subway attack last July, a new brand of terrorism from small, loosely defined cells, not affiliated with Al-Qaeda, but inspired by a violent jihadist message. The terrorists in Madrid and London and Toronto were not sleeper operatives sent on suicide missions, Gonzalez said. They were students and business people. They were members of the community. That's the actual statement by the Attorney General of the United States in relation to the events in Miami. And the clear implication is that any citizen of the United States, whether connected to politics, whether interested in the Middle East, whether involved with any activity whatsoever, can be treated as targets for incarceration, for conspiracy trials, and for permanent disappearance.
And, Ralph, with this massive raid where they cordoned off the area of the neighborhood of Liberty City, they arrested at that very same day four of the seven men. Lemarin, who's 31, had been arrested on Thursday in Atlanta, where he is living. He had moved there several months ago and had actually left the group. Fanor was already in state custody in Florida on a parole violation. And Patrick Abraham, who's a Haitian, had been in the custody of immigration officials since May for allegedly overstaying his visa. So this great grouping that they had arrested, two of them had already been in custody. One didn't even live in the city and wasn't part of the group. As public defender Jimmy Hardy stated when he appeared in court, he said, quote, "There's less than meets the eye here. the only Al-Qaeda person was the undercover guy.
Maya, in the New York Times article, buried in the article is the following acknowledgement. At a briefing, Deputy Attorney General Paul J. McNulty acknowledged that the terror prosecutions have picked out seemingly unsophisticated people not engaged in action. And indeed, he goes on to say that the approach they are taking is prevention through prosecution. Instead of, rather than allow a threat to take shape, they move in as soon as there is any evidence to warrant that. Today's example is a good example of that approach, said McNulty. Now, look carefully at what they're saying here. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter who you are. You can have no connection to anything. It's going to be prevention through prosecution. And here we have the paradigm of the terror state in the hands of the ruling class. What is the category within which everybody is to be ensnared in this endless prison camp society? It's the category of conspiracy, most frequently invoked judicial precept in every prosecutorial level, municipal, county, state, or federal. Conspiracy, conspiracy, conspiracy. No conspiracy involving the rulers with the treason at the top. They're obsessed with conspiracy, they're engaged in their own conspiracy, and they're accusing the people of the United States of being involved in a conspiracy. And that conspiracy, brothers and sisters, is the mass of the population's alienation from the policies of this decrepit, decadent, and isolated and criminal ruling class, McNulty acknowledged. He claims that 261 people have been convicted or pleaded guilty in terrorism-related cases. But then he has to acknowledge that most of those charges were dismissed. Many of these people were actually acquitted. Some are awaiting extradition as fugitives. And the same theme being trumpeted by the press is to be found in the June 23, 2006 Wall Street Journal, which gives a list of so-called convictions attained by the Department of Justice in terrorism cases since September 11, 2001. Every single one of these is based upon a category called material support. Material support for what? Giving money or supplying goods to some cause? There is no actual connective evidence involving this plenitude of cases. And the most revealing, because I can't go through them all at this point in time, but if you look, brothers and sisters, at the article in Wall Street Journal, the particulars of each one of these accusations involve something called material support, which is the broadest kind of category about which any of us could be accused and ensnared. Material support can mean a phone call. Material support can be a letter. Material support can be a contribution to some charity organization, which is then accused of having some connection to some individual who's connected to someone else. There is no limit to the conspiratorial plots of the authorities in relation to defendants. Prominent amongst those who is listed as being a terrorist is none other than our mother courage, Lynn Stewart. And in the Wall Street Journal itemization, she is charged with being convicted of material support and resources to terrorists. She's not mentioned as the lawyer, the legal representative of the accused in the 1993 bombing. She's represented as a material support convictee for terrorism.
Ralph, we had mentioned before the statement of the public defender, Jeffrey Harris, who's president of the Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, states that in the Miami case, if the authorities created the crime, that's classic entrapment. In fact, the authorities did create the crime. The suspects do not have extensive criminal histories in Florida, the records show. The Orlando Sentinel's article of Friday, June 23rd, is entitled, "Indictment Reveals Little Hard Evidence of Terrorist Plot." They couldn't even sell the notion of these homegrown terrorists to the Florida press. The fabrication just doesn't hold up.
And yet, Maya, Here in the first announcement by CNN, we have the following. The suspects wanted to kill all the devils we can. They are as good or greater than, they want to do events as good or greater than 9/11. They will begin with the Sears Tower. They will build an Islamic army to wage jihad in the United States, and they will wage war in the United States government. Every one of these things is, in fact, put forward by the Attorney General and based upon nothing but the FBI's own operative. No single statement can be found from the accused. Only the FBI operative himself is responsible for these claims.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen will return after this brief station break.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener supported and non-commercial.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, playing the tarot card, the Miami Mirage. Ralph, I was mentioned before the Orlando Sentinel, and you mentioned CNN. What we have here is CNN being a wing of the federal government and orchestrating the propaganda of the federal government. Meanwhile, various newspapers saw through the ruse, such as the Orlando Sentinel, and most prominently is the Detroit Free Press, which has a very important article that appeared on June 24th in this Knight Ridder newspaper by Marissa Taylor and Leslie Clark, Terror Arrests Questioned. Note that title, Terror Arrests Questioned. No weapons or direct Al-Qaeda link raises civil liberties concerned. It's a very important article. I suggest you look at it at www.freep.com.
Maya, the article is is an actual pilot piece of journalism. in a way surprising that Marissa Taylor and Leslie Clark of Knight Ridder Newspapers were allowed to publish it, because it isn't even hesitant. It says that the arrests with an orchestrated series of news conferences in two cities, and the severity of these charges compares with the amateurish nature of the accused, and it raises serious concerns. And they say, we're as puzzled as everyone else, said Howard Simon, director of the Florida chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. No weapons, no explosives, and yet this major announcement. And they go on, under the sweeps of various locations in Miami, the government agents themselves found not a single explosive. They couldn't find a single weapon. They did not have any document. They had no links to Al-Qaeda. They have nothing. And indeed, that what's interesting is that they claim that the accused Narciso Bautista, who is being invented as a ringleader of something, provided the FBI informant with a list of materials and equipment needed to build an army, including boots and uniforms and machine guns and radios and vehicles. Well, this man has never had any connection with these items, and not a single one of them was produced. They didn't have them. They didn't find them. They don't exist.
And, Ralph, they ask only for $50,000, which isn't going to buy very much. And, in fact, Narciso Bautista, in May, told the informant, according to the indictment, that the plot had to be delayed because he had problems within his organization. And as I mentioned, one of the members had left to go to Atlanta. He had abandoned the organization, and it's quite clear that this tiny group of people who were held together because of their interest in religion and their interest in trying to foster peace within the community, that this group itself was breaking up.
Well, Maya, there is no organization. There's nothing more than an ad hoc collection of young men who are gathering together to do martial arts and to follow precepts, as I mentioned, of vegetarianism and eschewing tobacco and alcohol and drugs and meditating. That's about the extent of it. And when you look at the Detroit Free Press piece, they make an extremely interesting point, and that is that the absence of evidence is measured by the fact that they are charged with conspiracy. Hinging the case on conspiracy charges robs a potential jury of evidence of a crime. That is the statement in the Detroit Free Press. This is the sort of early strike strategy that invites Bill of Rights violations, stated Nathan Clark, an attorney for defendant Rothschild Augustine. The group doesn't have the means. There's no basis that the government will have any evidence to sustain its burden of proof, the lawyer is cited in the Detroit Free Press. It's an article in the Free Press that does what the rest of the bourgeois press fails to do, which is to actually quote the defendants and their attorneys and to highlight the fact that there isn't anything to be brought against these people.
And, Ralph, you mentioned before the terror indictments and also the convictions. And if you look at most of these convictions, the people actually plead guilty to lesser charges, whether it's their immigration charges or their other smaller charges. And the government never makes its case about terrorist operations. It's just that they so burden these poor victims that they end up pleading guilty to some lesser charge instead of facing life in prison.
Well, that's what the Voice of America report makes very clear. When they say these individuals wish to wage a full ground war against the United States, to kill all the devils we can, and to be just as good or greater than 9/11 is the orchestrated disinformation psyop statement of the Voice of America. But then there's a very revealing statement in the Voice of America account. Because they don't have any evidence, they have to be brought to book on a charge of conspiracy, because the charge of conspiracy is what will guarantee long prison terms. Conspiracy without evidence, as the Orlando Santino says, little hard evidence of a crime.
Ralph, what's happening in the United States follows on the heels of the terror cell indictments that took place in Canada in the beginning of June. 12 adults in their early 20s and 5 minors, the 17 suspects of a supposed Islamic terror cell that was extending to the United States and 5 nations, particularly to Georgia in the United States. The charges were importing weapons, planning a bombing. The charges were made public for the adults, but not for the minors. The purported terror group had targets outside of Ontario. And U.S. law enforcement officials said investigators were looking for connections between those detained in Canada and suspected Islamic militants in the United States, Britain, Bangladesh, Bosnia, Denmark, and Sweden. What authorities established that 2 men from Georgia who were charged this year in a terrorism case had been in contact with some of the Canadian suspects via computer, according to an article that appeared in the Canadian press. Canadian terror probe expands to 7 nations on June 7th that I was from AP News and I saw on myway.com. Now, what's interesting about the Canadian case and has been reported by us and has been exposed in the press is that the armaments, the ammonium nitrate, which was one-third of the amount, was used in the deadly bombing of the Oklahoma City. This was 3 times that amount. The ammonium nitrate had been supplied by the Mounties. Ralph?
Before we deal with Canada, and I think it's very important that we do, Maya, I want to mention two aspects of this contrivance, this fake terror plot. One of the things that Gonzalez and the others highlighted was that the conspirators were going to be meeting in a place called Isla Morada. Isla Morada, as if there is some Al-Qaeda, as if Osama bin Laden has established some community in South Florida. Isla Morada. I was puzzled by this, so I checked it out. You know what Isla Morada is, brothers and sisters? It's in fact the Spanish for Isla Morada. Isla Morada, is a village in the Florida Keys. It is a vacation resort. The average temperature is 74 degrees, and it is, and the advertisement board says, bring your family, friends, or lovers to escape to the Florida Keys, where enjoying life is the order of the day and having fun a real priority. The tropical weather and the beautiful waters that surround our islands are the main ingredients in a sweet recipe. Whatever your taste, you and your family are sure to find a slice of paradise here in the Florida Keys village of Isla Morada. And they tell us the following. Isla Morada means Purple Isle, and it was named by the Spanish at the time of the Spanish colonial occupation of the region of southern Florida. But the government presents this as Isla Morada, as if this is some Islamic center that these young men are visiting. It is nothing of the kind, and indeed the entire contrivance of this terror plot is best expressed by this crude psyops-like fabrication.
Ralph, let's return, because when you talk about psyops, let's really return to the Canadian situation of earlier this month, because what we have here in the United States is a duplication, but in Canada they let it go even further than in the United States. The 9 of the 17 in Canada are facing charges of receiving training from a terrorist group, and 4 are charged with providing terror, the training. 6 are also charged with intending to cause an explosion that would cause bodily harm or death. And the Canadian media reported that the suspects attended charged by the Canadian government attended a training camp in Washougo, a rural community 90 miles north of Toronto. And the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, when they displayed the evidence, their evidence included uniforms, flashlights, walkie-talkies, and detonators. And they refused to say whether any of this had been at the training facility. They refused to say where they acquired this material. For all we know, it came from the Mountie's evidence locker itself. And there were 3 tons of ammonium nitrate. As I said, 1/3 of that amount was used in the Oklahoma City federal building bombing in 1995. There is nothing to say that this group could ever have acquired any ammonium nitrate. It was the Mounties who delivered the substance to the group in a sting operation. Again, here we have in Canada, just like in the United States, a sting operation, entrapment, classic entrapment, set up by the federal authorities in order to say that there are terror operations at work.
Yes, Maya, the Canadian operation, as we have already described on Taking Aim, was greeted with sensationalist headlines in poster-sized type. Storm Parliament, seize the politicians, behead the Prime Minister, that's the Globe and Mail, the Jihadist Generation and the Toronto Star, the Jihadis Among Us, the National Post. And in fact, the Prime Minister Stephen Harper hailed the arrests and warned Canadians that they are not immune from the threat of terrorism. And he made explicit comparisons with 9/11, and he stated that this was part of a worldwide phenomenon in which random community people and people in the society at large would be homegrown terrorists who mix with ordinary Canadians and make them especially dangerous and difficult for security to apprehend. They were poised to carry out major terrorist attacks, young men and boys. The entire orchestration is parallel to that of what occurred in Miami. And, in fact, the Toronto Star, Thomas Walken's piece, was virtually alone in questioning the official story, noting that the timing of the terror plot serves the interests of the police security establishment and the Harper government that were anxious to have a parliamentary committee pass an anti-terrorism act, rather like that of the Patriot Act, and they were pushing through a major expansion of the Canadian Armed Forces intervention in Afghanistan in the face of widespread public opposition. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the Intelligence Services of Canada have been engaged in these terrorist conspiracies. They had done it before in 2003, arresting a group of 23 South Asians in something called Operation Thread. As soon as the fanfare dies down, which found that there was not a scintilla of evidence, it was without any foundation. The country's most influential newspaper, the Globe Mail, the National Post newspapers, and the La Presse editorialized in favor not only of a conservative victory, but in the passage of these totally repressive measures in Canada. That's what this is really about, as the press in Canada disclosed.
Ralph, I suggest that our listeners, brothers and sisters, that you go to the World Socialist website, www.wsws.org. There were two important articles on June 13th and June 21st about the situation in Canada. There are also the articles, as Ralph mentions, in the Canadian press. It's very important to look at the situation in Canada, because we have the very same situation being duplicated here in the United States. And what's important to note is that the accused in Canada are being, that their attorneys are being denied the right to meet with them in private, that they're being held in isolation cells, small windowless cells, that they're being allowed very little activity, in solitary confinement, and they are being roughed up and facing terrible treatment. And these are young men for which there is no evidence.
The Canadian press makes the comparison. U.S. bus compared to arrests in Canada. They're calling it a homegrown terror bust like Canada's. The case provides ammunition for Canadian officials who have been battling accusations that Canada is overrun with extremists, students, business people, members of the community, the terrorists and suspected terrorists in Madrid and London and Toronto. As Gonzalez, the Attorney General, states, it's the population of the countries concerned that are being targeted here. And nowhere is that there more, is this more clear in, than in the reports. And for example, the New Standard, Congress may bestow unchecked spying powers on the president. This is on June 23rd. While dozens of lawsuits challenge the Bush administration's warrantless surveillance of Americans slowly moving through the courts, the Senate Judiciary Committee is poised to pass legislation that will effectively legalize the practice. Indeed, Congress has the power to ensure that the president follows the law, but they have chosen not to use it, said Brittany Benevitz, staff attorney of the Center for National Security Studies. In fact, the legislation that has been quietly passed going through will amend the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA, and establish new procedures that entirely allow the president to have the discretion to spy on anybody. It eliminates checks and balances. It eliminates the constitutional right to freedom of expression. It eliminates any prohibition against unreasonable search and seizure. It amends the FISA that imposes penalties for warrantless surveillance. It allows a retroactive exception to criminal liability for federal agents spying on people without warrants at the discretion of the president. It eliminates a provision in the federal code that prohibits wiretapping without authorization. It is, in fact, an authorization of uncontrolled surveillance and apprehension at the discretion of the president of the United States.
Ralph, the Los Angeles Times published a very important opinion piece, Big Brother Bush and Connecting the Data Dots, by Jonathan Turley, a law professor at George Washington University, and he goes further than what you are talking about. He says, the disclosure this week of a secret data bank operation tracking international financial transactions is the latest in a series of secret surveillance programs, data banks, and domestic operations justified as part of the war on terror. And this is all happening. The Miami is timed perfectly to deal with he says is the full incursion on our civil liberties disclosed individually over the course of the last year. They have become almost routine. Yet, when considered collectively, Turley writes, they present a far more troubling picture and one that should be vaguely familiar. And he goes on and lists some of the recent disclosures, the domestic surveillance program operated without warrants involving thousands of calls that are isolated by computers at the NSA, the massive data bank that contains information on hundreds of millions of telephone calls, access to information in the massive data bank that carries 12.7 million messages each day on international financial transactions, use of massive private data banks with access to an array of information on citizens, and at least 199 data mining projects, and support for the National Registered Traveler Program, in which citizens voluntarily submit private information. What he notes is that while Congress disbanded the Total Information Awareness Program, it did not prohibit further research on such data banks or even the use of individual data banks, and that a study by National Journal states that the National Security Agency transferred part of this work that had been originally consolidated as Total Information Awareness, and it put it as Research Development and Experimental Collaboration Program. And in fact, this network of data banks has become a comprehensive system.
Well, the main point of Turley in his piece is that DARPA, the Total Information Awareness Program of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which because of popular opposition was stopped in 2003, has been implemented piecemeal. That they are taking this, going even further than DARPA had represented or had attempted to accomplish. The domestic surveillance program without warrants is now in the hands of the NSA. The massive data bank about telephone calls, that's also under administration now. Access to information in a massive data bank for 12.7 million messages each day on financial transactions. All of that is being compartmentalized and handed out to different components of the national security apparatus, and the Supreme Court has removed legal barriers to the government's acquisition of personal information for records of banks and telephone companies and other businesses without a warrant. In essence, what we really do have here is the architecture of the fascist state.
And Ralph, part of that is that AT&T has announced, AT&T, which is a consolidation again of Pacific Bell and Southern, Southwestern Bell and all these Bells out west, AT&T has announced that personal records are no longer your personal records, but they are business records. And as such, AT&T can do what it wants with your business records. That is, turn them over to the government.
Here is the description of the treatment of the accused in Canada. Mind you, these are not convicted people. Alex Nave, the Secretary General of Amnesty International in Canada, has documented that the young men live in artificial light 24 hours a day. They are unable to sleep. They are interrupted every 30 minutes by the police so that they cannot sleep during the night. Sleep deprivation is being imposed. They are in total isolation, and they will be in that condition until 2008. That, indeed, is the meaning of this orchestrated campaign. And what we have to bear in mind here is that the Democratic Party has rubber-stamped these police state spying measures. In fact, we learned that all of the major figures of the Democratic Party had been completely briefed on the electronic spying, And indeed, part of the Hayden hearings, where the essentially the military is being put in control of the Central Intelligence Agency, it's revealed that the Intelligence Committee Chairman Pat Roberts had involved all of the leading Democrats who acquiesced in and were participants in these programs in secret sessions. That means Harry Reid, the head of the party, Tom Daschle, the leading Democratic Party people, were completely complicit in this National Security Administration conspiracy against the most elementary freedoms in the United States. The list includes Bob Graham, John Rockefeller the Fourth, Carl Levin, Harry Reid, Dianne Feinstein, Daniel Inouye, and in the House, Pelosi and Jane Harman, and the ranking members of the intelligence committees, including John Murtha and Rush Holt, Anna Eshoo, Bud Kramer, and Leonard Boswell. This is the ruling class at work, secretly behind the scenes, implementing the most draconian police state measures, the actual architecture of the totalitarian state, and they need this terror, as the pretext and the rationale. It is not without accident that the timing of this event in Miami coincides with a demonstration of 250,000 people in the poor sections of Miami in relation to what? The Miami Heat triumph in the finals of the National Basketball Association. While people are gathering in these large numbers around supposedly a sports event, they are treated to the spectacle of combat troops in descending in armed vehicles in relation to a presumptive terror attack. They are intimidating the population of the United States because it is these mobilizations and the potential for mass mobilization that frightens the authorities. Camps for U.S. citizens, this is the counterpart to the conspiracy at the top with these fake terror plots and the total abrogation of the rights of the citizens of the United States, brothers and sisters.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Playing the Terror Card, the Miami Mirage, will be on our website, www.takingaim.info, and on the WBAI archive, www.wbai.org. Next week, there is special programming on WBAI, and we will be back in 2 weeks.
Michael Franti from Spearhead, and you're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is the place to turn to.
Peace. Oh my God. Yeah, my mother got a sleeping suicide.